Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by to visit me on Renee's Heart to Heart. Happy Tuesday to everybody. Well, for those of you out there who don't know it, today is my 65th birthday. I'm not really sure where all that time has gone. I'm not really sure how I got to be this old and still feel like the exact same person on the inside. I will go along with the fact that all the physical stuff is a bit more challenging at 65. But I reflected on this a lot yesterday, thinking about, gosh, 65. Neither one of my parents lived to be 65. My paternal grandmother lived to be 102. And her lifestyle, I never knew her to work. She always kept a big house, but there were six of my dad's siblings, and went to church every Sunday, and every night a glass of Mogan David wine while she did the rosary. So there's something to be said for that. She got to be the ripe old age of 102. My other grandmother passed away when she was just about 70, but she was a tough woman, and worked pretty much all that time until she, I used to laugh because she'd tell me she was taking care of old people, and I thought she was one, but she never felt that way. So it's amusing how everything else changes, but who you are inside. You have different ideas. You have different feelings about different things, that's for sure, because you kind of, you know, every lesson, every life lesson that you get teaches you something different and often changes your mind about something that you thought you would never change your mind about. There's lots of those things for me. And I think that I am more open-minded now that I'm older. Of course, probably that has a lot to do with how much I've seen, heard, done, witnessed, all of those kind of things. That kind of opens your mind a little bit wider. But one of the things that hasn't changed, I think, is that I still care about people. I remember caring about people when I was very young, worrying about hurting other people's feelings, looking at somebody and thinking to myself, they look sad, wonder why they look sad, and feeling like it was my job to do something about the fact that they look sad. So some things really don't change. They alter a little bit because you learn how to deal with things differently. But I think who you are inside, way back to when you can remember, is who you always stay with all these other variables. I think your core really never changes. And I just thought I'd reflect on that this morning because it is my 65th birthday. And it seems strange to me that there was a time when I thought 65 was so old, and of course now I don't think it's all that old at all. Funny how that works. Maybe that's one of those little blessings that helps you get through it. I'm not sure. I'm going to bring in Shelley because we are going to talk about an article that somebody sent me that I have been told is bogus. And I have been told that before because I've read this before. But I think the article is very interesting. And what I'd like to do is peruse through it, and we'll discuss some of the things that we know for a fact we've seen work. Because Shelley is writing a book in regard to issues like this and healthy avenues instead of, as my daughter-in-law put this week, going under the knife all the time, make a lot of sense to us. So I'm going to bring Shelley in and say good morning, and then we're going to read this article. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey. Can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
I'm doing good because my phone's majorly acting up. I'm actually talking to you, and it's saying, unfortunately, the process Android phone has stopped working. But meanwhile, so it's like,
well,
I have a little,
you know,
error message, but I can still hear you. So there you go. It hung up on the show twice while I was trying to call in this morning. So we'll see if it actually stays up during the entire call.
Well, you know, there's a lot of the storm that we had through the night, I think might have a lot to do with what's going on. My computer did the same thing to me this morning, came on and said, your internet has quit working, but everything was still moving forward. So I thought, well, you know, you're not the first person that told me something that's not quite true, so I'll just deal with it.
There you go. Okay, well, that's a good way to start anyway.
Yeah,
anyway, when it starts like that, you know it has to get better, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's like this article. I posted it on my Facebook page on the weekend because I'd seen it before and I'd lost it. And I thought, you know, it's really worth discussing. Well, when I posted it on my page, I got feedback from some of our cohorts from the Institute, some past and present, and they all told me that they loved the article too, but they had been told that Johns Hopkins denies having anything to do with it. And
I have thoughts about that.
Well, I think what makes it interesting is not who wrote it. I never think the people who do the organizing of anything that rings true to me, I mean, I appreciate their efforts, but it's not about, so if, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go through it. We're going to see some of the things that we know are true. And as I mentioned to the audience this morning, you are in the middle of writing a book, and you've been on a lifelong journey to get yourself to a better place health-wise and have helped many other people as well as animals. Shelley is a avid animal lover. That's why she's friends with me. She's done a lot of things that are considered, I don't know, another avenue to help people and animals, and she's writing a book about it. It's so I think this, I read through it, and most of it rings true to me. So we're going to talk about that, and I'm going to say right now, I don't know if it's from Johns Hopkins, and I honestly don't care where it came from. A lot of the things in it I know to be true. So I'll start. They've got most of them numbered. We're going to go through them, and then we'll talk about them as we go through, because some of them I believe in, some of them I don't believe in, but it should be fun to go through them. Are you still with me, Shell? Yeah, I thought I lost her. Let me see if I need to bring her up again. Yeah.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Now you're back. Yeah,
okay.
You're back now.
I just want to make one comment before you start reading it.
Okay.
Two quick points just for people to kind of have this focus. One of the reasons why it would have been great if it had been Johns Hopkins is because most people that don't know this information would lend more credibility to it if it came from some sort of a prestigious and well-known organization, you know, a hospital research, a research center, something like that. So we were all excited when it first came out, believing that Johns Hopkins had said that, because, in fact, the things in there are true, and we knew them to be true, and we're like, okay,
right.
Here is somebody from the scientific community, not from the holistic healing community, saying these same things that we know to be true and that we've been saying. So I want people to understand that what they're going to hear, we already knew from other sources were true. But
yeah.
What happens sometimes now, this is something that I also know to be true in my investigations and my research. Sometimes the certain types of businesses, and it's unethical, not everybody in that business does it, but certain businesses, to discredit other factions, will put out untrue information and then blame it on the other faction to discredit them. The pharmaceutical industries used to do that a lot with this going back a couple of decades ago. The pharmaceutical companies and research centers were doing that with regard to animal experiments. They were damaging some of their, and this was actually proven that they were, and in one instance they had actually damaged one of their own research centers, that they were doing research on animals and blamed it on an animal activist group in the area, and it was discovered years later that it was actually an inside job of the lab, and they were trying to discredit the animal activists. So they did it to themselves and then blamed it on them. So I'm not saying that's what happened, but I'm saying that if, in fact, this was put out there and somebody said it was from John Hopkins and it actually wasn't, it doesn't mean that it was somebody trying to do something wrong. It could have been somebody that worked there that was trying to say, hey, yeah, I agree with this information, and then didn't want to take credit for it, all right? Or it could be somebody in that arena trying to discredit the holistic movement, saying, look, they're going to put out information there and try to say that we said it and we never did, so because of that lie, it has to be untrue. So there's a lot of gray areas as to why it was leaked, but all that being considered, the main thing today is that you and I and all the people that we know in this arena know that the things you're about to read are true because we've seen it, experienced it, and know it from other independent sources. So we
can kind of take
all that muddy water and let it flow downstream now.
Yeah.
And
just
straight on the fact.
And the fact of the matter is, you know, we've had many discussions about many other things, inclusive of the Bible. You know, it's all in a matter of what you believe and what you don't want to believe. But facts are facts and truth is truth. And, you know, if the sun comes up every morning and you say that and you write it down one day and you say, I know this to be a fact that the sun comes up every morning, and somebody lives in Alaska, they can dispute that with you. So it's all about that. So, I mean, the very first number one, every person has cancer cells in the body. These cancer cells do not show up in the standard tests until they have multiplied to a few billion. When doctors tell cancer patients that there are no more cancer cells in their bodies after treatment, it just means the tests are unable to detect the cancer cells because they have not reached the detectable size. Okay, now I just had this conversation this week with family members because I have a sister who has cancer for the third time, and everybody in the family has come to me and said if she's been going to the doctors for almost 7 years for cancer and they keep testing her every 6 months and they keep saying that she's cancer-free, how did this happen, Mom? And that's the answer right there. And that's true, true, true. I don't care who wrote it. It's true. You agree?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, when some of the people had come to Hippocrates and they heard, you know, one of the lecturers saying that everybody's got cancer cells and that the only time it becomes a diagnosis of cancer is when the numbers have proliferated so high that now all of a sudden it becomes a diagnosis. But that if you've got them in the thousands, even in the hundreds of thousands, it's still not considered a diagnosis of cancer. When some of the guests coming to Hippocrates would hear that, they would tell me that their own doctors told them the same thing. So they say, oh, yeah, I already know that. My doctor explained that to me. So There are some oncologists and medical doctors that do explain that because some of the people that came there knew that before they heard it from us. So this is something
yes.
that doctors explain.
Yes. Well, and it's just so sensible. The whole statement is so sensible. A cell is minute, and there are, you know, there are billions of them in our bodies, and there isn't anything that is intricate enough, any piece of equipment that our scientists and all the powers that be have designed that is intricate enough to pick up one or two or even 10 cells that have something going on with them because there's just so many. So there, I used to tell especially young people, kids that would come to the Institute, they would say to me, you know, how does everybody know I have cancer? And I said, well, because wherever you have a part of your body that's kind of weak, that struggles to stay healthy, like smokers, their lungs struggle to stay healthy because they're, you know, they're decreasing the health in their lungs every day by smoking. With a child, it's hard to know. It's very often has to do with hereditary problems or birth defects or something like that. But what I witnessed, and I'm not Johns Hopkins and I'm not a doctor, I'm just talking about what I saw with my own two eyes, was that many times if you have a very weakened part of your body that struggles to stay healthy and you have a poor lifestyle, you're under a lot of stress, even as a child, the cancer cells will like go to that weakened part of your body and set up housekeeping. And eventually, enough of them will move in so that they can be detected by the equipment that we have to look at people's bodies. Now there's PET scans and MRAs and MRIs, and I mean, there's a billion different kinds of tests now that they can use to test everything. But even after they see something, they have to do pathology reports. So there's wonderful things in the medical arena, wonderful, wonderful things that we can, you know, we can find out so many things with. But this number one is absolutely true, and people have to be aware of it. So let's move on to number two, because this one I struggle with, because, and I'm looking forward to hearing your input, Shelley. Okay. Cancer cells occur between 6 to more than 10 times in a person's lifetime. Now, I don't know how somebody would know that, and I don't know what that's based on. Do you?
No, I don't know what that's based on, but I can absolutely agree with it. I don't remember when it was. It was at some point, I think, when I was working at Hippocrates, I had a test because I was under an extreme amount of stress. And it turned out that I did have some conditions which we were able to deal with. I had gotten so healthy, and then this actually shows the effects of stress on the body. Here I was impeccably healthy, had struggled for 30 years, and then brought myself to a point where I was like one of the healthiest people around. And then under stress, working too many hours, not getting enough sleep, and you know, blah, 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 some of the other stuff, I got really sick. And there were some cancer cells showing up, but it was very, very low numbers. So it wasn't a diagnosis of cancer. It was just they came up on the radar. Okay, and then once I got a handle on everything, those numbers decreased. So just because that happened to me, no, it never turned into a diagnosis of cancer. One of the things you said a moment ago is that you really can't detect cancer cells when they're too low. I think they can detect the numbers if they're specifically looking for a particular type of cancer, but it won't become a diagnosis unless the numbers go above a certain threshold, because of the fact that we all do have cancer cells in our bodies. So that's the indicator. It's the number that all of a sudden flips it into a diagnosis. If you've got a few thousand or even 100,000, it's not a diagnosis, because that shows an indication that your body may be going in that direction, but it's not a diagnosis. It's not enough cell to actually be called cancer. But so I don't, like you said, I don't know how they would know that unless somebody like me, unless they were tracking somebody with health issues and they saw that their numbers kept spiking, you know, and then it receded. And so the only thing I can talk about is my own personal experience. I'd be curious to talk to other people with cancer to see if before it actually became a diagnosis, if it fluctuated like borderline, where their body was showing an inclination to go that direction. But then receded again, because that's what happened to me, and then I've never had anything like that since.
Well, that makes sense for me for statement one, but the thing that I'm questioning is the fact that they can take a person's lifetime. First of all, number one says there's cancer cells in everybody's body, but they don't always show up. Okay. And we agree with that. We've been told that by many, many doctors. We've been told that by many, many holistic people. We've, in one way or another, come across that information either in the treatment of ourselves or in a family member. Number two, though, like I said, says cancer cells occur between 6 to more than 10 times in a person's lifetime. That particular statement is difficult for me to wrap my brain around, believe, or put any credence to. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that if you can't detect a small amount of cancer cells, like what they say in number one, then number two, in my opinion, becomes obsolete. That's all I'm saying.
Let me explain something to you. When they say detect, first of all, I'm not so sure that I completely agree with that particular comment, because I know that they can detect cancer cells at lower levels. Okay, maybe not in the thousands, but I know they can detect them in the lower levels. But since it was in the 1930s. I have to find that article and do a follow up. I'll look for it later today, and maybe when we do our follow up on Friday, I can kind of update on this. But there was a medical doctor who won a Nobel Peace Prize, and this is going back in the early 1900s, and he found the cause of cancer, and it's been unrefuted, which is why it surprises me that oncology took off with chemotherapy the way it did, because this man found this out before chemotherapy was really like the answer in the United States. And he found that all cancer is caused by what's called acidosis, and that acidosis, which is an acidic condition on the inside of the body, where if a particular organ becomes very acidic, and there are things that cause that, we can talk about that later, but whatever causes an organ to become acidic, cancer is the next step. It becomes acidic, then it becomes cancerous, because the acid condition actually feeds cancer cells. So based on that, he made maybe it was from his findings, he said that one of the things that brings it about is emotional trauma, depression, stress, and poor diet. And then he mentioned some things in the diet that brought it about. Now, back then, they didn't have all the nonsense in the food we have now, so there was only a couple of things dietarily that he had mentioned. But stress was one of the big factors that acidifies the body, and based on your particular predisposed weaknesses because of heredity and lifestyle, maybe your pancreas would go and you'd end up getting diabetes, or it would affect another part of your body and you would end up getting tumors or masses there, things of that nature. So based on that...
We agree on that 100,000,000%. That's absolutely true. The only thing that I'm questioning on this number two, and I'm not going to beat it to death anymore, is the fact that they've made the actual statement that cancer cells occur between 6 to more than 10 times in a person's lifetime. If you can't detect...
Well, they're probably looking at the stressors. They're probably looking at the stressors that people go through, that most people go through 6 to 10 very stressful time periods in their life. And I think you could... Jobs, this kind of stuff. You have about 6 to 10 peaks in your life where you're under undue stress. I can look back in my life and pick out about a half a dozen spots over the course of 50 years that kind of stand out. Maybe they're looking at that kind of event and saying that's when cancer.
I can do that this month. I can think 6 to 10 times.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So we could discuss this at length. The point I'm making, though, is there's a contradiction here between one and two. If every person has cancer cells in the body, these cancer cells do not show up in the standard test until they have multiplied to a few billion. When doctors tell cancer patients that there are no more cancer cells in their bodies after treatment, it just means the tests are unable to detect the cancer cells because they have not reached the detectable size. And then they make a statement, cancer cells occur between 6 to more than 10 times in a person's lifetime. So if every person has cancer cells in the body, that's a flat-out statement, number one. And then they say number two, those two don't jive for me, and I can see how they would confuse somebody who takes things literally. And
that's
my only point with that. I don't know. Maybe it is true, and maybe it does have something to do with stressors. That's an interesting argument. However, I will say this, too. If you're 50 years old and you've only had 6 or 10 times in your life that were stressed, you're a lucky-ass person. So,
yeah, but
number
we're
three.
We're also not talking normal stress. We're talking those times in your life where major, major incidences, like being fired or having to move to another state or something like that. You know, we're not talking just normal day-to-day stress. We're talking major events. I don't know that people have major events every week.
Right now in my lifetime, I have two people who are looking at possibly having cancer. One of them has already lost their voice box and has a trach with a machine in their neck. The other one is going through the same kind of thing. Stressors, it also has a lot to do with what age you are and what part of your life you're in. When you reach your 60s, many of your friends, your loved ones, the people that you've grown with, are going through struggles. And if you're the kind of person that is affected by the people you love, if you're not, then stress stays away from you pretty much. But if you are the kind of person that's affected by what's going on with others, stress can come in abundance. You know, it all depends on who you are. Let's move to number three. Otherwise, we won't ever get through this whole list. When the person's immune system is strong, the cancer cells will be destroyed and prevented from multiplying and forming tumors. And I think we both agree with that.
100%.
Yeah. And immune system, for those who are thinking that it means that the word immunity means things don't touch you. And it's a good word to call that part of our system the immune system. It makes a little bit of sense to me. But because we're all so different, building your immune system can mean different things for different people. And if this is a struggle for you, if you are suffering all the time from chronic colds, from chronic sinus infections, from anything that's chronic, it means you have your immune system is under some distress. And again, building your immune system has to do with everything from, well, we've talked about this since day one on this show, your nourishment. And your nourishment comes from the food you eat, the water you drink, the conversations you have, the lifestyle you lead. So it's everything. You can be a raw vegan and only eat sprouts, spinach, wheatgrass, kale, all that stuff all day and still have a jeopardized immune system because of what's going on in your head. So don't forget that. It's very, very important. Yes, it all goes together. When a person has cancer, it indicates the person has multiple nutritional deficiencies. These could be due to genetic, environmental, food, and lifestyle factors. That's a pretty open one. What do you think about that one, Shel?
Well, but it is true. I mean, it in general, it's kind of paraphrasing what you just said a moment ago. The bottom line is what compromises the body are all those different factors. So they're not going into specific detail, but as an overview, that's exactly what opens the door for cancer. So I agree with that one as a non-specific but overview statement. It's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree as well.
One comment about immunity, because this does play into why when you start strengthening your immune system, the body heals. Our immune system does two things, and most people don't realize this. Our immune system is, number one, supposed to protect us. One of the tasks it does is to protect us from illness. But the other thing our immune system does, which, again, people don't think about, is that it also repairs damage. So if you've suffered an injury and you're trying to heal from it, your immune system is what heals the injury. And if you've got cancer or some sort of inflammatory condition, like rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, which is acidicness of the pancreas, when you have those type of conditions and you strengthen the immune system, it will also repair and normalize those areas of the body. So it'll start normalizing the pancreas or it'll start healing the injury or whatever. So that's the other thing about lifestyle. When you find out how to boost the immune system and you take on these lifestyle practices and you start thinking differently. You are more.
I lost you again, Shelley.
You can support the immune system.
I think nobody heard the last couple sentences you said, honey.
Can you?
No. No, my telling me I still have you, but I don't. So I'm going to go back to the report and give you a couple minutes. To overcome the multiple nutritional deficiencies, changing diet and including supplements will strengthen the immune system. This is pretty much what Shelley just said, and that's number 5 in this report. To overcome the multiple nutritional deficiencies, changing diet and including supplements will strengthen the immune system. Again, I want to remind everybody, nutritional is a multifaceted word, and changing your diet, the dreaded D word, has a lot to do with the lifestyle you lead, etc. So I want people to think smartly. I want people to understand that giving up everything isn't the answer either, because we're all different. You need to experiment a little bit and bring yourself to a place that is suitable to you and serves you the way you need to be served. Are you back, Shelley?
Yeah. Yeah, and I heard your last comment. I agree with that.
So number 6, we have chemotherapy involves poisoning and rapidly growing cancer cells and also destroys, let me read that again because they have, chemotherapy involves poisoning the rapidly growing cancer cells and also destroys rapidly growing healthy cells in the bone marrow, gastrointestinal tract, etc., and can cause organ damage like liver, kidneys, heart, lungs, etc. And I want to make sure that everybody understands that I have seen this. I have seen this many more times than a dozen, and this is a true, true fact. And here's the truth. If you take chemotherapy, for me, is like a gun. A very dangerous gun being held by somebody who doesn't know what to do with a gun. And when you point it at a small cell that's encased in someone's body, what happens, everybody? You kill that cell, but you also kill that person. And I'm sorry, that sounds very dramatic, but because I have seen that so many times, I've watched people from chemotherapy, whose bellies start carrying all kinds of fluid, whose lungs fill up with fluids, whose hearts start getting weaker and weaker due to the chemotherapy. Chemotherapy is a poison, and it's designed to kill cancer cells. The problem is your body is housing the cancer cells, and it's very, very scary. I do know some people that have survived chemotherapy. And ideally, if you are in a position that you have been convinced by your medical team that chemotherapy is the only way to go and you have to do it, it's not my place to tell you not to or to, but if you make that decision, then one of the most important things you can do for yourself is get yourselves on a nutritional balanced program. And by that, I mean really, really strictly, so that you, like Shelley just talked about, the acidity and the alkalinity, it's imperative to get your alkalinity to the right place. It's imperative to get yourself strong enough to withstand the blast that's going to hit you from that chemotherapy. And sometimes it is the only answer, and that's your decision to make. God bless you. But you do need to know that everything in that particular sentence is absolutely true. I've seen it way more times than I'd like to tell anybody about. Do you feel the same way, Michelle?
Yeah, I've seen it also. My uncle, who is one of the most beautiful human beings that ever walked on earth, he had passed away from cancer, and at the very, very end, he was frail, he was skeletal, he almost looked like a child. He had lost so much weight. He was completely immobile in the last few months of his life. His personality was intact, and it was just heartbreaking seeing him suffer like that. And it only took a few years on chemotherapy for his body to just completely shut down, and he became emaciated. I knew another individual who had bladder cancer and was told that she had 6 months to live and refused chemo and lived for another 17 years. Now, she was a very mean person. She was not a nice person at all. She had a lot of issues and all this and stuff. She made no lifestyle changes. She just refused the chemo and lived for another 17 years. I mean, and I know a bunch of other stories like this where people that did nothing, I'm not talking about did something proactive and healed themselves, but people that did nothing and lived for more than a decade with the cancer and just carried on because they weren't willing to do chemo. So there's something to be said for that. When they give out these timelines, if you have 6 months, you have a year, you have maybe 2 years, and then so often I don't understand why the medical establishment always goes to those time frames, because for the people that choose to do nothing, that generally never happens, and for the people that choose to be proactive, we personally know people that have been cancer-free for decades, not that five-year period that the oncology industry is trying to get you through, but we're talking 20 and 30 years. I personally met people, Hippocrates, that had come to them when they were back in Boston, and here it is 3 decades later, and they're still completely cancer-free because they made lifestyle changes.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I agree with that.
We both know that to be a very, very true fact. And let me say that it's not Shelley and I talk about Hippocrates because it is very near and dear to us, but there are many places popping up all over the world because people are understanding the facts of keeping your body in a place that is healthier and happier, and nutrition, of course, has a big part to do with it. We both worked at Hippocrates.
Yeah, there's many centers, but I just say Hippocrates because that's where I met them. But, yes, you're right. There are those types of centers literally all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and some of them are amazing. There's a place called Santa V that I've never been to, but I've had the opportunity to work with them a couple different times, and they're amazing. And they open up the medical world a little bit more than a lot of the other places, which in some cases suits some of the people, which is the perfect scenario for them. And I do think that the more of these kind of places come up and the more opportunities there are for people to have an organization or a program, whatever you want to call it, an institute, whatever that suits them the best is the perfect scenario. Because, again, you know, I can't say this enough. We are all totally different, and what works for one will not work for another.
So one other comment before we go on to seven. I'll make this real quick. When you're talking about chemotherapy, you had made a comment that sometimes chemo is necessary, and I actually agree with that, and I'll tell you why. As much of an advocate as I am for the holistic approach, I do believe that in some cases, if you have a cancer that is so aggressive that it's imminently life-threatening, like somebody's got a tumor on their neck, and I'm talking about this because this was an actual scenario that played out for us. This woman had a tumor on her neck right next to her aorta, and it was growing very fast. And if it had encroached on the aorta, it could cause it to have a heart attack or a stroke because it would have cut off the blood supply or allowed air pockets in the blood supply, okay? So it was imminently life-threatening. and the suggestion was made for her to go ahead and have some radiation to reduce the size of the tumor, kind of like shock it back, to allow the lifestyle to then come in and then prevent it from getting large again, from then accelerating. So there have been a couple of times where, and then there was another situation where the woman had a breast tumor, a similar situation. It was massively growing. It was growing too fast. And at this time, in both these instances, we were looking at marrying them, doing a short blast, not a full series, but a short blast of chemo radiation to get a particular cancer situation kind of halted, make it pause for a short amount of time, to give the lifestyle enough time to then kick in and suppress it the rest of the way. So that is something that I've seen that's worked with marrying the two of them together. Unfortunately, a lot of oncologists believe that if you do anything to support the immune system, you're also going to be helping cancer cells, and it's not true. The things that boost our immune system do not help cancer cells to grow. So I think that's a very important distinction, and some doctors know that, some doctors don't know that. But if you are taking chemo radiation, it is a good idea, based on what I've seen personally, to then boost the immune system simultaneously so that you're helping your healthy cells stay healthy to continue battling the chemo, battle the cancer.
Well, and I agree with that as well. And I have, in the perfect situation, what we used to advise people to do is, if they've made that decision and if that's what they're going to do and they trust the people that are working with them, and there's many wonderful, wonderful cancer clinics now that are popping up all over here in Florida, we are very blessed to have a couple places that are just really awesome, cutting-edge equipment, all of the stuff that makes a difference. However, if you do make that decision, it's just like anything else. You know, if you have a house that you love and you're going to spend a whole bunch of money and redecorate your kitchen, one of the biggest, most expensive ventures in remodeling a house is the kitchen.
Yeah.
You're going to make a brand new kitchen because your kitchen has fallen apart. And in the meantime, you know that you have major leaks in your roof. Is it wise? I'm just asking you for food for thought. Is it wise to put that several thousand, maybe $100,000 kitchen in a house with a bad roof? Is that a good idea? Does that make sense to anybody? People do things like that all the time, I want to add, but it's not sensible. And you have to fix things first. And getting your body stronger and healthier before you invite in a poison. Doesn't that sound smart to everybody? Doesn't that sound like go? Doesn't that make just more sense than you know what to do with? Of course it does. Now, radiation is another topic that is a very sensitive thing for me. I lost my mother and my brother to cancer, and both of them had extensive radiation. And let me explain what radiation does. Radiation fries you. It's like taking, say you have lung cancer, it's like laying your torso on a grill and burning through your skin, through your epidermis, through your tissue, to burn away the cancer cells that are growing in your lungs. Now, if you can envision that, I want to ask you something. Does that make sense to you to do that? Does that sound like something that's going to serve the rest of your body? doesn't. After you do extensive radiation, which maybe at some point in time seemed our only answer, I think radiation has become antiquated, harmful, and almost barbaric. My brother's head and neck was so fried from radiation that when they did some additional surgery, because the cancer wasn't gone from the radiation, he could, if you've ever sewn a piece of very delicate material, like a Dacron or something that has a weave in it, and you put the needle in and it won't pull the seam together because the material just keeps shredding, that's what happened to my brother's skin. Even in the incision in his neck, I used to have to put gauze in the holes in his neck because stitches, sewing it, glue, tape, wouldn't hold it together because the skin was so fried, there was no blood left in it, just like you took a steak and threw it on the grill and burn it to a shriveled up black thing, it disintegrates in your hand. It gets like charcoal. Have you ever done that before? That's what happens to your skin.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yep.
And I've seen that now with two very important members in my life. My mother had lung cancer, and I will never forget, as long as I live, we're in the hospital, and the nurse looks at my mom and says, "Wow, for somebody who's so sick, you have a great tan." I thought my mother was going to stand up and bitch slap this woman. My mother's black as charcoal. And it was from the radiation, not because she's been out lying by the pool. So for me is, you know, this, in this particular article, the sentence is reads like this, and this is like nothing. I mean, it's true, but it's not as awful as the real truth. Radiation, while destroying cancer cells, also burns, scars, and damages healthy cells, tissues, and organs. And of everything that we've read so far, I would say that that is the biggest understatement of anything we've read so far.
I agree.
They still use radiation, and it's very trying. It's a daily thing. Many, many times the patient has to have anywhere from 18 on up to like 30-some treatments of radiation. And every day it gets a little bit stronger. So I, as you can tell, I'm against radiation. I think at some point in time in our history, it may have made sense, but it doesn't anymore. There's much more out there now that makes a lot more sense. So radiation for me is horrific. It's almost barbaric. Number 8 is initial treatment with chemotherapy and radiation will often reduce tumor size. However, prolonged use of chemotherapy and radiation do not result in more tumor destruction. Wow, that's a pretty interesting statement. Let's analyze that a little bit. Yeah, but let's talk about why we still do it then. Initial treatment with chemotherapy and radiation will often reduce the tumor size. Okay. However, prolonged use of chemotherapy and radiation do not result in more tumor destruction. So if that's true, and I know that it is, we both know that it is, why are we still doing it?
Are you hearing me clearly? Because I'm getting feedback on my end.
I hear you, but you cut in and out. I had you on speakerphone because my arm falls asleep while I'm sitting here with the phone up to my ear. Do you hear me better now, honey? Let me hear you.
I hear you better, but I was getting feedback on my own voice. Are you still getting feedback on me?
No, it's perfect.
Okay.
It's perfect.
Okay, yeah, I'm not getting feedback anymore right now. So, yeah, well, I mean, yes, I, I, I agree with that because I've seen it. I know people that it's happened to. I know people that have been supposedly cancer free after a certain series of chemo or radiation, and then within that 2-year or 5-year period, all of a sudden the cancer comes back, and now it's in other places in their body, or the original tumor comes back with a vengeance. And the reason for that is that you and I aren't telling people not to get chemo. What we're telling people is to educate
right.
themselves through all the different options. And if you are going to do chemo, you need to also strengthen the immune system to withstand the damage that chemo and radiation is going to do to the body. Even the medical doctors will tell you that chemo and radiation damages the body, so we're not saying anything here that the medical establishment isn't aware of. But what a lot of oncologists are not trained to do is to understand the importance of boosting the immune system beforehand so that you have enough healthy cells left to still battle the cancer, because the chemo and the radiation will take a lot of those healthy cells out also. So what happens is now if you don't do anything to boost the immune system first and you just go in and do the chemo and radiation, yeah, it will reduce the tumor size. It'll start reducing the cancer numbers. But then it's also taking out a lot of your immune system. Now you're done with that round of chemo and you're in that holding pattern now where they're watching you, but you don't have enough of an immune system. They haven't gotten rid of every single cancer cell. We've already discussed that. So the cancer is not gone. It's just remissed enough to the point where it's no longer a diagnosis. You're cancer-free because the cancers aren't high enough to be a diagnosis anymore, but they're still there. But now you have this damaged, diminished immune system. The cancer fights back and just proliferates again and will either come back in the same place or will metastasize. All of a sudden it'll pop up in other places of the body where it wasn't. How many times have you and I seen somebody that had cancer who did chemo and radiation, became cancer-free with whatever the location of the cancer originally was, but then during that watch period, the cancer popped up in other areas of their body? It's almost like it distributes it. I mean,
yeah.
I've seen that happen hundreds of times over my 7 years working at
too.
The Institute.
Well, and the point is, it's interesting because number 9 is everything you just said. When the body has too much toxic burden from chemotherapy and radiation, the immune system is either compromised or destroyed. Hence, the person can succumb to various kinds of infections and complications. So, again, I want everybody to remember while we're reading this and discussing this that even though this came to me as an article that was written at Johns Hopkins, the feedback that I've gotten, and I don't know whether I can prove it or disprove it, that it didn't come from there, and chances are it didn't, because it's pretty, the more I read, the more I realize that it probably didn't come from a hospital or an organization like Johns Hopkins, because this is what they do for a living. And this is how they teach their doctors, and this is what they do. And they believe in it. So all this negative stuff about their genre doesn't ring true to me. So it probably did not come from Johns Hopkins. But my instinct tells me to tell you that almost everything that we're saying, Shelley and I and maybe many of you out there, have seen this in real life. This is not something that seems far-fetched. This is not something that you want to say, oh, baloney. I have like half a dozen family members that are over the age of 60 who all had this, this, and this, and they're fine now. If you can tell me that, I'd love to hear from you. I would love, love, love to hear from you, because there's a lot of cancer in my family, and there are no survivors. None. There were survivors sometimes for 10 years, 15 years. They are no longer with us. And what did they succumb to? They didn't get hit by a car. They died of cancer. So these things, I doubt, came from Johns Hopkins. Let me make that very clear. But I'm telling you right now that everything that Shelley and I are talking about today, we have seen in real life, and not once or twice, but a lot. there are people
One other thing to keep in mind when you're talking about statistics, and this is one of the reasons why statistics in the medical community are so unreliable, is that because they can use particular criteria to come up with a particular statistic, but when people succumb to a secondary illness after chemo, they can say the person died of that condition, which they wouldn't have acquired except for the fact that they took chemo and completely eradicated their immune system. So they can say they died from something else, and they don't have to say that the chemo played a role in it. So that's why these statistics with the person dying from the cancer or the chemo are not realistic, because if they get something else, they say, oh, well, because they were so sick, now they died of this heart disease, or they died of this, or they died of that, and they don't associate it to the original cancer or the chemo. Meanwhile, that is, in fact, what they really died from, and the statistics will never show that. So.
Well, and, you know, it's very strange, but my stream is telling me that I have like 28 minutes left of the show, and my watch is telling me that it's 8:05. Do you have a watch on you?
Yeah, we have about 5 minutes.
Yeah, so that's weird, because my stream is telling me that I have 28 minutes left.
Yeah,
so
there's been a little
strange
electronic weirdness this morning already with just what my phone was telling me, that my phone lied to me a couple times this morning, and now your computer's lying to you, so there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so what we're going to do then, because we are down to such a little bit of time, I'm going to finish reading all the things, and then tomorrow we're going to talk about a more holistic, a more natural way to help yourself get to a better place. And I'd like to put an open invitation out there to any of our friends and associates that are aware of this lifestyle who would like to participate in this. If you are somebody out there that works in this all the time and gets the correlation between food and diet versus cancer and illness, we would love to hear from you. But I'm going to finish some of the things that they've got here first, and then we'll leave the second half of this for tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Where did I get to? I got to 9, right? When the body, yes. Okay,
yes.
Chemotherapy and radiation can cause cancer cells to mutate. This is another very interesting factor, and become resistant and difficult to destroy. Surgery can also cause cancer cells to spread to other sites. Now, we also know this to be very true, and we understand the fact that the deal about mutating. Years ago at Hippocrates, I did lectures on pest control. And it's an interesting thing that because of all of our pest control products, we have mutated a lot of the bugs, and you can't kill them unless you step on them. So it's the same way with cancer cells. An effective way to battle cancer is to starve the cancer cells by not feeding it with foods it needs to multiply. That's what I'm going to leave with everybody. And I'm going to tell you that tomorrow we will go into this in detail, and the pros and cons about what you eat and what you put in your body, and what you listen to as well. We're going to talk about all those things. And again, I invite any of our friends that most of them are at work this time of day and they can't do this, but if you can, we would love to hear your input. We have a couple of psychologists, too, that have called the show a couple times who could touch on the psychological part of finding out that you're suffering with a cancer or something as bad as cancer, if there is anything that bad. But in the meantime, I want everybody to have a great day. go out there and show everybody who you are and have a wonderful one. And we'll be back tomorrow morning. So bye-bye, everybody, and God bless. Bye, Shell.
Bye, Renee. Goodbye, everyone. Have a great day.